Florida Telehealth Foundation is proud to introduce you to Do Good Volunteer of the Month, Patrick Dietrich from Superior Search and Rescue. Patrick volunteers his time to train outside the area and bring it back to the team. The new training programs have been a huge help. During several missing person searches, his knowledge on building search tactics helped make searches successful. If you know an incredible volunteer like Patrick, go to dogoodcc.org and nominate them to be recognized as the next Do Good in the Copper Country Volunteer of the Month.
Welcome once again to Copper Country Today. Good Sunday morning. I'm Todd Van Dyke. Our program is brought to you by the Portage Health Foundation, and you can learn more about them at phfgive.org. It was a little over a year ago that my heart broke when I read the news that Michigan Tech was going to abandon and perhaps even tear down the historic Ford sawmill at Alberta. That's an area that's been kind of close to my heart over the years. I grew up in the lumber and building industry, and I had toured the sawmill and seen how it worked, and it was just a wonderful facility and very historic, and I thought, oh, they can't let this happen. And fortunately, some people from the Baraga County Historical Society have stepped up and are mounting an effort to try to save the sawmill and perhaps even expand opportunities to view it and to use it in educational purposes. So I welcome into the program this morning Mike DeRocher. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Todd.
And Wayne Abba is here. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning.
And we also have Dave Stemmick, who was the last sawyer at the mill, correct?
Correct.
So you were the guy who actually operated it.
Yes, I did.
Now, when you operated it, that would have been after Henry Ford sold it off, obviously, because you're that old.
No.
So when did you operate it?
I started there late 1975, and it ran under Michigan Tech. Well, it had been running for Tech, but I was there between 75 and 1980 is when it closed, and I wound up being the head sawyer in the latter years there.
So what were you doing for, what was the mill being used for at that point? Because obviously this was built to provide lumber for Model Ts. They weren't making any Model Ts then.
No, the wood in the Ford days there, that town was built basically for public relations.
Well, that's true, and I have heard that this was kind of a showcase, even the mill itself, kind of a showcase mill, very low volume.
Low mill. Volume. Yes, very low volume, built in 1935. And the wood that was produced there did go to Kingsford. That went into Woody's, and they were still using it, but they were phasing wood out already in the 30s. So a lot of that wood went to Kingsford for some Woody's, and then also for gliders. World War II came up.
That's right, because they made gliders
there
up
there. There was a lot of gliders made there.
Explain to the young folks who haven't seen them what a Woody is.
Oh, God. I'm not the one to explain, but it had wood trim around the outside of them. The panels, like you see the cars with the surfboards on the top, those were Woody's back in the day.
Yeah, they had wood side panels on the exterior.
Yes, they did. Yeah, a lot of that was birch. Whereas the Model A's, the T's, and all of them used a lot of hard maple, and that's why Ford was in the UP.
Well, I found it ironic that Ford bought thousands and thousands and thousands of acres of land here that had already been forested over because they took the pine.
Yes.
The original lumber companies took the pine. They basically rebuilt Chicago after the fire. With a lot of the lumber that came out of here. It was those hardwoods that you mentioned that they didn't want. They left them behind, and it was the perfect opportunity for Henry Ford to come in and say, we can use these poplars and birches and maples and such to make our cars.
Oh, well, absolutely.
Floorboards and dashboards and running boards and a lot of boards.
250 board feet of lumber to make a Model T. That's
correct.
A lot of lumber.
That's a tree.
It really is.
Yeah, and he was a pioneer in some of this logging practices that Michigan Tech is continuing. I mean, he used to say if you cut down a tree, you use everything but the shade, which was quite a statement, you know. You don't waste anything.
Yeah. Wayne, are people surprised, younger people now surprised, to find out what an influence Henry Ford had in this area?
I really don't know if the young people understand the influence that Henry Ford had in this area. And one of the things we've done to try to to correct that is to reach out to the Copper Country Intermediate School District, because they're promoting something called place-based education. And we'd like to get the preservation of the sawmill tied up with that.
Yeah, it's, if you look around the Upper Peninsula, it's just incredible. The central part of the UP, you know, from here where he had hundreds of thousands of acres of timberland and three sawmills, one in Alberta that we're talking about today, one in Launce at the harbor, and one in Pequaming. You know, he had those, and then in the southern portion of the UP, he had manufacturing facilities. They made iron. They made Model Ts in Kingsford. Kingsford was named after his relative.
Yes, he was into vertical integration. He wanted to control the entire supply chain from the raw material to the finished product. And so he did that with mining, he did that with lumbering, and he did that with the rubber industry in South America.
Yeah, he wanted to own every little piece. He didn't want anything left to chance. And so he made Prickett Dam. He built Prickett Dam to provide electricity for some of his facilities. I'm told the lumber camps in his logging industries were so posh compared to other lumber companies, yep, that the lumberjacks who worked for him, the others made fun of them. They called them soft and wimpy because...
Ladies.
Yeah, because their camps had heat and electricity and sometimes running water and real bathrooms and everything. You know, nobody had ever seen that in the Northwoods before, but that was Henry Ford.
Absolutely. That mill, you think about that mill built in 1935, how many places like that had steam radiators with heat, a roof over it? It was absolutely state-of-the-art in 1935.
So let's talk about why he built this in 1935. We mentioned before, it was kind of a showcase. It was certainly not a lumber mill that paid for itself in volume.
No.
So what was the point?
It was his utopian experiment. He had purchased all these other mills. He purchased Pequaming from Hebbard, for example. He purchased Big Bay from the Brunswick Company that made bowling pins and such. And he used the Thunder Bay Inn there as his headquarters for a lot of his work with the Northern Michigan operations. So the point of Alberta was to create this utopian vision of his, to have a self-sustaining village that was producing state-of-the-art lumber products, but also had responsibilities for the families that lived there to do some of their own gardening.
I love that story, too, because if you lived in Alberta, you were allotted a one-acre plot, and you were required to use it to grow vegetables. And the sand around Alberta turned out to be, what, a little less than hospitable for veggies?
And the deer liked what they were growing.
I'm sure they did.
It's basically a gravel pit.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not he didn't think it through in that regard, I guess. He maybe should have consulted somebody who knew a little bit more about agriculture. But that was the requirement. If you lived there, if you worked there, you were going to farm that 1 acre and grow healthy and beneficial food for yourself and your family. He believed that this was going to create a perfect community, I guess.
Yes, that was his.
But his vision turned out to have an unexpected result, too, because he located this right next to one of the most popular tourist destinations in the UP, Canyon Falls on the Sturgeon.
Yeah.
And there, Alberta sits astride US 41 on the major gateway to the entire Keweenaw.
It does. Everybody who comes to the Keweenaw drives past Alberta, and they see the little Ford sign over there on the hill up above the lake. And they all say, gee, what the heck is this about? And a few of them over the years would stop and find out, and now it's been closed for tours for quite some time. We'd really like to get this going again.
He actually dammed Plumbago Creek up and built that lake.
Well, the highway goes over the dam.
For water, goes underneath. He had the water going into the pump house, the little white building, which is going to be the art teacher's
Alberta Artisan House,
and then for the sawmill, for the log pond. So that they rerouted US 41 because of that.
Now, Dave, explain why you need water for a sawmill.
Well, his sawmill was really unique because, well, they had the log pond there. And in those days, they didn't have debarkers and things like that. So they fed steam heat into that log pond. It would thaw out the logs. It would wash all of the dirt, the rocks, stuff like that. In the winter, a frozen log hits a saw, you know what happens.
Yeah, if nothing else, your blade's not going to last very long.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, so, yeah, it thawed out the logs, washed them off, so you had nice, clean logs coming into the mill. They needed the water for the boiler, which generated all the heat. They generated electricity through that mill to supply the town.
And it was basically going to be self-sustaining.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So that's the reason for Plumbago Lake there,
yes.
Which is completely artificial.
Yes.
Created by the dam from the little creek that ran through the area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the lake is there to this day, and the little Ford sign on the hill next to it. There's a little pathway you can take around the lake if you want to take a nice little hike. Yep. So how deep is the lake? Ever tried it?
25, where the Ford sign is, right off there is the deepest spot. It reaches 25, maybe close to 30 feet.
Oh, really? That's a lot deeper than I would have suspected.
Yeah, that's the deepest part of it.
So they got this thing going, and it was, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, kind of half functional, but also a bit of a showcase. Henry Ford wanted to show off things, and this mill was a real showplace.
State of the art at that time.
Yeah.
The reception building, was actually... half of it was the pump house for the water, but the other was the reception building, because people... There's info somewhere that says how many people actually visited when that first opened. It was the model town. You know, one of the newest towns in the country, people would flock there to see Alberta, see a working sawmill, see how a board is made, just general information about Ford and his empire.
He branded everything that he did, the Northern Michigan operations, and when I learned that, you look around Alberta and you see these little stamps all over the place that say ALNMO. Go to Big Bay, it's the same thing. Yeah. BBNMO and so forth.
What, ALNMO?
Yeah. Alberta, Northern Michigan Operations.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So all these sites you'll find right on premises, that stamp with their identification.
Yeah, and you find his footprint all over the place. I live in Launce on Kingsford Street.
Oh, sure.
And of course, Kingsford was his wife's cousin or something like that.
Brother-in-law.
Was a relative who became part of his operation. He got the Ford dealership down in Iron Mountain and eventually became his point man here in the Upper Peninsula. And eventually the town of Kingsford was named after him, the Kingsford High School Flivvers.
Kingsford Charcoal?
Kingsford Charcoal was a byproduct of his steel plant.
Yeah.
I think that I'm quite sure the plat that I live in Launce was financed by Henry Ford, because I live on Kingsford Avenue and Ford Avenue is the next one over, and I'm sure that he financed it and they named the streets in his honor when they put the sawmill into Launce and needed more housing for people. The house I live in, I'm sure, was financed by Henry Ford.
Yeah. One of the groups that we've become associated with is the Henry Ford Heritage Association. And this is a group that's devoted to the legacy of Henry Ford the man, not necessarily the industrialist. It's based downstate, and the COO is a Ford family member as well.
He's a great grand nephew of Clara Ford.
And they plan to come up and visit. One of the things that they've observed in talking with us is that they've spent a lot of time on the cars, but not on the natural products, on the wood.
Well, and he loved this area. Just innately anyway. I'm talking with Mike DeRocher and Wayne Abba and Dave Stimmick, involved with the Berrigan County Historical Society and the effort to restore and preserve the Alberta sawmill and the legends and the history that goes along with that. He came up here on those legendary camping trips with Thomas Edison and Harvey Firestone and people like that, all documented on film. Those must have been the most significant glamping trips of the early 20th century. He just loved coming up here.
Keith Whitman is writing a book about that, about Henry Ford and his affection for the Upper Peninsula and its people. He gave a presentation at the Whirligig as we were getting this group organized, and we look forward to seeing that book come out in print.
Well, and you mentioned that he used the Thunder Bay Inn.
Yes.
As a headquarters in Thunder Bay, or in, not Thunder Bay, Big Bay.
Yeah. It was an old company store, and he converted it into a place for his executives to stay when they were in the area. And we stayed there. We had one of our committee meetings there. We were snowed out the end of February, but we did go back the end of March, and I stayed in the Clara Ford suite with my wife, and one of our committee members, Jim Dugavito, stayed in the Henry Ford suite, and it was a really interesting evening.
And, of course, he had a similar affection for Pequamming. He had the cottage, quote-unquote,
bungalow
in Pequamming that he loved to stay at. And I am told that when they shut Pequamming down, he was, of course, elderly at that point. It was after the war or during the war, I think it was. And he was no longer in control of the company. Control of the company had been taken away from him. And I'm told that when they shut that down, he cried.
Keith Whitman tells that same story. He also talks about how when Henry Ford would come to Pequamming, he would take the fire truck, load it up with kids, and take them down to the candy store and buy them all a treat. And Keith Whitman today owns that fire truck.
They had a dance instructor. I mean, they had all of these civic things that
Henry
were going
Ford
on.
Henry was very big on proper dancing.
Yeah, and pretty much just anything. He wanted well-rounded communities, even up here in what was at the time still pretty much the middle of nowhere. Yeah. He felt it important that there would be culture here.
My Aunt Doris danced with him as a child.
Did she really?
And my mother and her siblings entertained him when he came up.
So let's talk a little bit about the effort that is underway now to try to preserve this historic building. I took a tour through it probably 15 years or so now ago, and it was still pretty much functional at that point, but unfortunately not so much anymore.
Yeah, we've done several awareness fundraisers, whatever you want to call them, in the past year. Keith Whitman gave that talk in the Whirligig Ballroom last fall, and it was well attended and it was educational. We also had an open house late last fall at the mill where people could actually walk through there and see how good a condition the inside is. And we've had several get-togethers, either meetings or different networking with Michigan Tech officials to get moving forward in a positive direction. And I think we have good relationships with them now, and we're hoping that this continues and we can use the little pump house as a model to what we can do with the mill in the future.
What needs to be done to the mill? I know that Tech, when they made their announcement a little over a year ago, cited a lot of repair work that needed to be done. It was expense that the university wasn't in a position to meet, and that was why they had made the decision. Yeah. What has to happen to get this back to the point where it's safe to go through?
Yeah, we did get a copy of the work that needed to be done and the cost. The figures back then naturally wouldn't be applicable to what today's costs are. But we do have that. One of our committee members, Mark Bivens, who is the owner of the Thunder Bay Inn at Big Bay, is working on a business plan, and we're hoping to work up some kind of like a five-year lease or such with Michigan Tech that we can move forward and come up with fixing the issues, the safety concerns. The inside of the mill is actually in very good condition, but the outside needs to be addressed and a few other issues. But we are wanting to move forward with that as soon as we can.
How much money do you think this is going to take to get this rolling forward?
Lots.
Okay. Can we quantify it, perhaps?
We can't quantify it yet. The business plan will do that for us, Todd, but you know, one of the things that I think we've learned is that a small volunteer organization centered around a local museum that's open seasonally is probably not going to take what it to provide what it will take to keep this operation sustainable. And one of the things we're looking to is that SHPO said that the lumbering industry is underrepresented compared to, for example, mining in the Upper Peninsula. And so there are many legacy operations around. There are families that have made fortunes on this, and we have some people who are waiting in the wings, if you will, to find out how they can assist us with this as we move forward.
I think you're right about that statement. We talk a lot about the mining in this area. We don't talk a lot about the forest industry that was so pervasive here up to a century or a little less than that ago. It was probably more of an economic driver by the time the 20th century arrived than the copper industry.
Well, they were very much in agreement that when we had a Zoom call with the State Historic Preservation people, and we had Mark Rudnicki on the call and our committee members, and we discussed some of these things, but they were feeling that the logging lumbering industry is something that should have more attention. And when they learned that everything was still intact at Alberta, they were just amazed, not just the mill, but the acreage gift and also the village, they sound like they'll get behind our project when we get all our application to them.
Now, one thing we should mention, and I've had some friends who've lived in Alberta over the years. There are still people who live there. These homes that are there are available for rent. They're available for lease. And there are private people who live in Alberta. And they have mentioned to me from time to time that people seem to think that Alberta is all open to the public and you can go poking around in every building that you want to. Not quite true?
No, not really. No, there's 12 residents there. And I've lived there now for, about 40 years. And, it's a very unique little town. Everybody that lived there probably told me they really liked it, too.
Oh, yeah. They told me they loved living there. But every once in a while, they would say they'd see somebody peeking through their living room window or trying to go in through the front door because they thought it was all part of the museum and all open.
Well,
so
that's understandable.
Yeah.
It's such an attractive place to, nose around and look. It's, you look at it and you say, geez, there's something with this town that isn't like a normal one. And you put two and two together, and
everything
obviously
looks the same.
Well,
the construction is the same, the paint color is the same.
Company town.
Everything is very much the same, so it just looks like it's one big entity. And once you go into it, it's just all yours for the viewing. And
the blueprints of those houses are actually they built them a little different than some of the blueprints in that, because I retired from there 6 years ago, but I still run the water system, and so got a lot of the maps, the blueprints, and everything. And so it's very unique the way that town was built. It was really built well, and that sawmill is sound. It's really sound, and there's repairs to do, but it's not astronomical by any means.
Could it run again? Could it cut lumber again?
We've had people come in there that are like millwrights, and I had a guy said I can rebuild every valve on that carriage. Yes, I do believe that could run with some effort, but no question. I would sit there and cut lumber again.
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh yeah,
to see
in
that
a heartbeat, I would.
Yeah, because it pulls some of the lumber from our because I know you do wonderful woodworking yourself. You've got a business that does that. It'd be so nice to be able to cut lumber and sell it to woodworkers and say, this is heritage UP lumber here.
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah. Todd, Jackie Rollison, the artist that's opening up the pump house, lives in Alberta. She's one of the renters. She lives on Model T Lane. And so this was such an amazing coincidence that she was there, and Dave was instrumental in working with her to come up with the idea of repurposing that pump house. And we're going to have half of that as an interim exhibit space. So before June 23rd, we'll be going out to the sawmill and taking some of the existing exhibits in there that tell some of the story of the mill, putting them into the pump house side of that building, that beautiful little building. And that little building is going to shine like a jewel within weeks. So we're going to get it all painted up and fixed up and cleaned up.
And that June 23rd date is important because that's when she's opening that business there. And the next day is Alberta Fest.
Right.
Tell me about Alberta Fest.
Okay, we're putting that together. We got a old car show that I'm in charge of that we're hoping to have a good number of Model A's and T's because the T's were first, but they were why Ford was up here. And then anyone that has an old car, it doesn't have to be a Ford, it doesn't need to be of that era, is welcome to come. We want to have a good representation.
Harkens back to old Tin Lizzy days.
Exactly, the nickname for the Model T. And then we are having crafters there. Holly, who is John Carroll's, who is an employee out at Michigan, is a Michigan Tech employee at Alberta. His daughter is going to be in charge of the crafters, and then Jackie's going to have her business open that you can go in and see what is going on there, and also see our exhibits in the pump side. So that's going to be, the crafters are going to be there from 10 till 4. I've asked the old car people to come from 10 to 3 because some of them we're hoping are coming from Isherming and down from Iron River and hopefully from up the Noggin Way and up this way at Houghton. So we're hoping for good weather.
That's coming up on June 24th. And before we wrap this up, got just a few minutes, a couple seconds actually left here. Tell me how people can support this effort.
Car people can contact me at 906-869-7878.
And the address to send donations to: Baraga County Historical Society, Post Office Box 567, Baraga 49908. And please note that it is designated for the Alberta Sawmill. And thanks to the three of you, Mike DeRocher and Dave Stimmick and Wayne Abba, for coming in and giving us an update. And keep us posted, will you please?
You bet.
Thank you, John.
Copper Country Today continues in a moment.